Welcome to Hello, It's Me, a podcast series for lawyers offering transformative discussions around personal and professional growth. We address the human side of lawyering in interviews, the pro-professional persona, authenticity, mental health and self-care, resiliency, and radical acceptance. The podcast is hosted by Maggie Poon and Orna Liu. In this podcast, Maggie and Orna interview Beatrice Leong. Beatrice is a matrimonial attorney and former vice president of programs and operations at Albany. She was recognized as the best under 40 by the National Asian Pacific American Bar Association. She was also received numerous other awards in recognition of her excellence and commitment to serving the community. In 2023, she was selected as a Dove Beauty Global Brand Ambassador for being a real-life version of beauty. We hope you will find our advice to be practical, our conversation to be engaging, and the community we're trying to develop supportive for you to thrive in both your career and personal life. We hope you enjoy the podcast.
Hello, this is Orna and Maggie, and we just want to welcome you back to our second episode of our podcast, The Conscious Lawyer. And we're very excited because we're going to be having our very first guest. Her name is Beatrice Leong. Welcome, Beatrice. We're really excited to have you, and we're so excited to have this discussion with you and to learn more about your background and your past experiences and how you deal with resiliency and mental health. Maggie, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, well, just to echo Ona's sentiments, we're really excited to have Beatrice here. I think she'll be a wonderful first guest. We'll let you kind of go into more detail about your career journey, but just to start to let our audience know, you know, Beatrice has practiced exclusively in the field of divorce and family law since her admittance to the New York State Bar in 2014. Before we dive into the crux of the conversation, we thought it'd be fun to just start off with some rapid fire icebreaker questions for you, Beatrice. So we'll ask you a bunch of questions. It's sort of like either or type questions. Don't give it too much thought. We'll have fun with it. So Orna and I will just switch off asking questions. So Orna will start off with the first one.
Yeah. Okay. So texting or talking?
Talking.
Favorite day of the week?
Saturday.
Favorite holiday?
Halloween.
Nice. Coffee or tea?
Coffee. Oh, yes. Coffee.
No question here.
Early bird or night owl?
Night owl. Super late night owl.
Pizza or burger?
Pizza.
Chocolate or vanilla?
Vanilla.
Summer or winter?
Summer.
Beach vacation or mountain retreat?
Mountain retreat.
Sweet or salty?
Sweet.
Art museum or history museum?
History.
Sandals or Crocs?
Crocs. Oh my gosh, I'm wearing Crocs right now.
Oh my God. We were thinking that you would not be wearing Crocs. It's like, she's totally like so fashionable. She's definitely choose sandals.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the one thing, that the Crocs are so amazing that I will, you know, I sell it to everyone. I buy everyone Crocs.
That's a good thing to know about you.
Yeah,
Blacks,
that question.
Yeah. Blacks or jeans?
Jeans.
Sparkling water or still water?
Sparkling.
Mac or PC?
PC. Oh. Can't go Mac. Yeah.
We're learning so much about the apps already, which is great. And then final question, are you a glass half empty person or glass half full?
Glass is always half full, baby. If there's water there, you can drink
it. Okay, well, thank you for answering those rapid fire questions. I thought that was a nice way to kind of start off the conversation, and we've learned a little bit about you already. Every time I see crops, I will think of you, and I will need to talk to you to see if they are worth getting. Because if you're really comfortable.
They really are comfortable. Yes, they look kind of like big and bulky, but truly, I've never had a more comfortable shoe, and I wear it every single day in the house. So it's my new house slipper.
That's what I've heard from everyone, that it's super comfy, but I just haven't pulled up a band-aid so I hadn't bought a pair yet. And maybe I should.
And the thing I love most is they're customizable. So like anything you love in life, right, they have it. If you're a Mets fan, they'll have a Mets one. If you're like cats or Huddle Kitty, they'll have those as well. Everything is really customized for people who like things, you know?
I was actually going to bring that up because the only thing that sort of drawn me to them is the fact that you can personalize them, because I've seen people add like the little arms or whatever, yeah, onto the shoe, and I always thought that was pretty cool, but then I never took the plunge.
Yeah, it's a nice way of self-expression.
Yeah.
And like, it's super comfortable, which I feel like maybe we can apply it to like life. Choose something.
Yeah, exactly.
Myself, and like, don't worry about what other people.
Yeah, if you like it, yeah. It's not hurting anybody.
And it's comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But yeah, Beatrice, you'd like to give us like maybe like a brief summary or of your past experience, any detail, any information you'd like to highlight? We'd love to hear it.
Highlight of my career or just going back to my education?
Anything that you'd like to bring up, anything that you think maybe makes you who you are today and makes you the attorney that you are now.
Okay, so basically you want to hear my villain origin story.
So we love that.
People always ask me, why are you a divorce lawyer? You know, we don't know divorce lawyers. We are in big law. We do, you know, different litigations. Why are you doing such a field where it's always so negative, fighting about money and kids? Well, it's because it was personal for me. Originally, I was supposed to be a prosecutor. I believed in the idea that if, you know, somebody was committing a crime against a victim, I would have the power to, you know, choose to either prosecute you or, you know, let you go. I really like that concept that, you know, if somebody broke the law, I could have, you know, a share in bringing justice. But when I was married to my first husband, I was a young lawyer at the time. And then out of, you know, nowhere, I was shocked to find out that he was cheating on me. So as soon as I found out, as a young person or as anyone at any age, when you have that level of betrayal, you sort of like your soul is sort of shaken up. Your heart is broken. Everything about you sort of changes because you've been with somebody, you know, 12 years, 13 years, and they just change on you all of a sudden. And I had no clue that was happening. So after my first marriage broke apart, I said, you know what? Maybe I have more passion now for helping people get over their heartbreak, right? Because I didn't have any kids, but I knew that, you know, people going through divorce with children were probably suffering even more than I was, right? So I said, you know what? Let me turn down that internship at the Queens DA and stop, you know, pursuing any of the prosecutor's offices. You know, in college, I was in the attorney general's office, the state prosecutor's office in New York. And I said, you know what, I'm just going to go try to find a job and learn divorce law for myself, right? Not only for my own divorce, but to see if I can help others, you know, get over the heartbreak. So then that, I always say it's my villain origin story, because since then, that was over a decade ago, I have, you know, broken up thousands of families at this point. So
that's funny the way you say I've broken up. I'd like to think of it as like you're giving them like a second chance,
yeah,
right? Like a freedom. But I thank you for sharing that with us. Sorry. Thank you for sharing that with us, you know, and sharing, you know, like maybe like a vulnerable experience that you've had in the past. I loved how you used that vulnerable experience to like, for a good thing. Well, sorry, like for like a good thing, like changing it and like, I'm stumbling over my words.
Like taking something that was a clearly very difficult time, yeah, in your life and sort of using it to sort of find a calling,
supercharge like your newfound passion, right? Like that is really the heart of what got you into family and divorce law. And I'm assuming that's really what drives you to continue going. I'm sure it's very difficult and tough and a lot of emotions. But, you know, I wonder, like for you in those moments when it's very, you know, there's a lot of hardships going on and you're faced with a lot of difficult emotions going around, do you just sort of
remind yourself of, you know, why you got into, like, what's sort of your thought process of trying to continue to move on, you know, in such a difficult space?
That is my exact thought process, because my clients are going through what I went through, you know, a decade ago. I remember myself sitting there not knowing what to do next, not, you know, knowing what's going to happen, you know, to, you know, my finances, right? Because at the time I had law school debt. I didn't really have, I was a young associate. It was very stressful time. And I think of my clients and say, I have to be gentle with them because I have to push myself back where I was sitting in that chair, right? I'm now sitting in this chair where I get to control, you know, the pace of the case. I get to convince the judge, right? I'm in a position of now power, right? The litigants, the clients are in a position of vulnerability, right? They're very vulnerable. And I always remember when you were like that completely, you know, your brain is all fuzzy. You can't think, you can't sleep. It's extremely stressful. So I think that really helps me as a lawyer, right? Because, you know, people who are happily married, maybe you don't really kind of know, like you can empathize with them, but you don't know how it feels. And I remember every second, you know, how it felt for me to go through that, you know, breakup, go through that divorce and the loss of a dream, I think, is the thing that every client shares. Because when you get married, you don't dream of getting a divorce, right? When you get married, you dream of having this kind of, you know, Disney fantasy life. Unfortunately, movies like The Notebook and Disney, they kind of give you this fake idea of like what, not fake. Some marriages are like that, right? But, you know, the overall sense that, oh, it's going to be lifelong. I will always have stability. I will have a partner. I will share our monies, you know. But again, once that is taken from you, when a dream dies, I think it's really hard for people to accept, you know, and sometimes it takes many years to get over. So I think with that, with my background of not only being a divorcee, you know, and now being a divorce lawyer, I can tell them from both sides, legally, here's what's going to happen to you, right? It's going to be fine legally. Here's what's going to happen. Emotionally, it'll also be fine, right? Because in the darkest time, right, is the litigation. But once that litigation is over, you really have a chance to, you know, explode and do a better life, better version of yourself than, you know, the first version of the marriage.
And I think that's great. And I think it really, like, your experience and your perspective really helps make you a stronger and better lawyer for your clients and an advocate for your clients. Like you said, there's that legal aspect, but also that emotional side. And just thinking, for any hardship people are going through, when you're sharing with a person, you know, your experiences, it's always nice to have that validation of, like, I understand how you feel. Like, I've been there. Because there are certain things you feel like you just can't explain, right? I mean, you're saying you can empathize for sure, but until you've sort of been through a very similar experience, it's a different type of validation, I feel like, when you're having those conversations. And I'm sure, like, in your conversations with your clients, like, that really rings true for them. Like, do you share with them, you know, I've been in your shoes, like, I've been divorced, and I'm sure that, like, feels so much better in a way, like, in the moment, to the extent that they can feel better.
Yeah. Oh, yes, definitely. I always share, especially the ones who tell me, Beatrice, you have no idea. You have a great life, a great career, a new, you know, I'm remarried, a new second loving husband. I'm like, but wait, I really do know what you're going through, right? They said, oh, you know, I can't believe you know, my spouse would run off with an affair partner. I've been there for them, you know, for years. I'm like, no, same thing. I was with my ex for, you know, 13 years. It was a long time. So when they hear that I've been through there and they see how I am now, you know, successful, my life is put together, I'm doing things for the community, then I feel like they have a little bit of hope, right? You see a little bit of change in their face where they're like, oh, it can be okay. It won't be just, you know, this sort of horrible, you know, uncertainty all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds kind of like you're a beacon of light for them, right? Like, you're there to help guide them through this really difficult situation. But at the same time, you're able to sort of be an example for them and show them, like, there is hope and there's light at the end of the tunnel, right? And, you know, it's a difficult time now, but you'll get through this, and I'm here to help guide you and help you through that process. And I think that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I want to believe that all lawyers are beacons of light. Every single lawyer, right? It doesn't matter if you do family law or, you know, personal injury or criminal law, it doesn't matter. I feel like the reason why lawyers exist is that we have to give our clients confidence, right? Why would they need you if they were confident themselves that they could get out of their legal problem, right? All lawyers are beacons of light. So whoever gets hired, whenever you sign a retainer, you're supposed to help your client get through whatever troubles they get through. Except for lawyers like, you know, the real estate lawyers and adoption lawyers, those are happy, super happy occasions, you know, where everyone's like, oh, yay, now I have a house. Or yay, now, you know, I have a child now through adoption. Those are really happy, you know, occasions where lawyers are paid to do something super happy. I think most lawyers are paid to be, you know, to do something terrible, right? Or help people out of terrible times. But I like to think that we went to law school because all of us are beacons of light, you know?
Well, that's a nice way of thinking about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a beacon of light. You're a beacon of light.
There are beacons of light.
Making it in-house lawyers, you guys are the beacon of lights for your companies. Because the companies don't know anything about the law. They're depending on you to, like, help them not get in trouble.
That's a nice way of thinking about it. You know, sometimes when you're in-house, it's like, it's hard to pull yourself out of, like, just the daily grind of, like, all of these issues that are coming up, new projects and all of these contracts you have to review. But yeah, I guess if you shift your mindset just a little bit and think, like, oh, I'm helping the company do this because without us, they might just, like, go into debt and get sued. Right. And I think it provides, like, a purpose for in an in-house counsel. Yeah.
Yeah, like, you're helping them move forward with their business objectives and goals, but in the way that best protects them or minimizes the risk, right, to proceed with what they want to do.
Absolutely. Like, you know, anytime anyone gets in trouble, what do you think of? You know, the TV show always goes, you'll hear from my lawyer. You hear from my mom, you hear from my priest. No, you'll hear from my lawyer. So we are, you know, I think most of society looks at lawyers as if they are the ones that will help you, right? Yeah, obviously, doctors, super important people if you have a medical issue. But if you don't have a medical issue, just have a problem in life, it's, you know, see you in court. Talk to my lawyer.
That is true. Like, you know, I always hear in talking to other lawyers and mentor type individuals, you know, us being in the legal profession, we're service providers. We're here to provide a service and help people. And Beatrice, to your point, like, doesn't really matter what area of law you're in. Like, we are here to help our clients further their goals in the best way that, you know, we're protecting them legally and doing what we can to get them to where they want to go.
Yeah. So I want to ask you, Beatrice, I know you mentioned, like, it's a villain origin story. I think maybe it's more like a Marvel superhero origin story, but, you know, like, you got into divorce law because of your experience with divorce. But let's say you had gone and progressed in your career in, like, prosecution. What do you think your life would be like? Do you think you would have maybe the same passion that you have now for divorce law in prosecution?
I think so. I think generally I'm a very passionate person. And when I find something that I love, right, maybe it's the Gemini in me, but when I find a passion, something that I love, I devote my whole life to it, right? So if it's, you know, if I were to be a prosecutor, I believe I would probably be running a bureau right now, right? I'll probably be head of homicide or whatever, because I think whenever I put effort into whatever I do, whether it's an organization like Omni or my job or a hobby, I give it my all plus 150%, right? So I think, you know, I definitely would have tried to, you know, change some of the policies of New York City. You know, we have a lot of issues in New York City, and I would hope that some of the ways to fix it would be from internally inside the DA's office, right? I think for sure, had my first husband not cheated on me and I'm still, you know, happily married to the same person, I would have continued on to become, you know, a prosecutor and probably one day running, you know, for the actual DA. I could see myself doing that. But, you know, I think that's another lifetime. In another lifetime, I can do that. But in this lifetime, I'm super happy helping my clients, you know, move on to their next steps in life.
That's great. And when you were going through this personal change, right, you were saying your intended career path was to be a prosecutor. And then, you know, your divorce was happening and you switched over. How was that? I mean, this happened when you were in law school, right, Beatrice? Or were you already a practicing lawyer?
I was in between. I was taking the bar, right? I was taking the bar, and I was already a law clerk at a criminal defense firm, actually. So all of this happened during a very vulnerable time, and I had failed the bar the first time. So obviously, you know, when it rains, it pours, you know, that terminology. My whole life, I had been, you know, this ideal, you know, Asian, you know, child, right? My mom said, you know, you have to do well in school. So, you know, I was a valedictorian of my elementary school. I was in AP classes. I got into, you know, a good public college, in SUNY Binghamton. I was on the dean's list there, got into a good law school. So all my life, I was succeeding, I think. And I think the failure of the bar mixed in with the failure of my marriage, mixed in with the death of my grandparents, everything was like tumbling down at once. So I think that caused a lot of the, you know, I think some, you know, one issue called, you know, sort of like everything affected each other, right? So to accept loss and failure, right, all at the same time, you know, I'm glad it happened to me, I guess, not while I was fully barred, right? Because I had to quit that criminal defense firm because I felt like I couldn't serve the clients who needed me because I was going through all these, you know, personal issues, right? The criminal defense firm had clients going through a lot of, you know, problems. I was assisting the attorneys with the clients and getting the paperwork. But, you know, if you yourself cannot do the work, you know, to help others, I said, you know what? Mentally, I cannot handle helping somebody else because of my own personal problems. I told my boss on a Friday afternoon, I can't continue because, you know, I don't think I can, you know, give my 100% to the client. So that I quit. But I was a very young lawyer. And then, of course, a few months later, I passed the bar. So that was all of that was still going on when I became a divorce lawyer.
Yeah. I love that you mentioned that, you know, like you quit because you felt like you couldn't help you couldn't serve these people like it in the current mental state that you were in at that time. And then eventually you pivoted to a different career. I guess, like, what was your thought process?
Yeah.
When you're, like you mentioned, like all of these things sort of fell tumbling down, how do you pull yourself out of that?
How do you navigate?
Right. How do you navigate it? And how did you recognize that, like, okay, I need to take a mental break, right? I need to stop doing what I was doing and let me redirect.
Especially on the heels of, you know, the point you brought up, Beatrice, of, you know, the expectations from Asian parents, right? Like, to get to that point to say, I need to take a break, like, it must have felt, of course, it was, like, really, really hard. But I think for a lot of the pressures we have from parents, like, that's a big deal, right? To say, like, I need to do this for myself. Like, to honest, but, like, how did you navigate that? I mean, was there a thought process?
Yeah, so I had a thought in my, the main thing that was sticking in my mind was the ethics class. That was probably one of my favorite law school classes was, you know, ethics for lawyers, right? Like, what is your expectation as a lawyer? And one of the classes that I remember most, it was the duty to the client, right? You know, you have a duty to uphold the Constitution. You have a duty not to lie to the court. You have other duties as an officer of the court. But for me, the thing I stuck out in that class the most was, like, your client is the one who's the most important person, right? Not you. Not the judge, right? It's your duty to help your client's case. So when I felt that I could no longer let them win, right? Because whenever I go into a case, my goal is to win, right? And it's almost never that I lose, right? Because I can't accept that, right? Again, my personality type, whatever it is, if I'm going to take a case, I'm going to do my best to win or draw, right? Because, you know, nobody really wins in a divorce, right? It's usually like a settlement somewhere in the middle, a very fair settlement, or many days I win, right? When I was the you know, in between passing the bar at the criminal defense firm, I didn't feel like I could win. I had no confidence, right? I didn't feel like my clients' cases were strong. But any lawyer, right, has to look at their clients' cases, even if they did something wrong. We got to find a way for you to help you win, right? Within the bounds of the law. So what I knew mentally that I couldn't think positively to be like, how can I spin this in a way where my client's going to win? That's when I told myself that it's not worth it just to keep face, just to have a job, right? I'd rather be unemployed, sitting at home than, you know, causing my client to suffer. So that's when I was like, this is not, you know, these preparations, you know, they're not going well. I'm trying to prep the client for, you know, for their hearings and everything like that. And I'm like mentally not gathering the thoughts I need to gather. So at that point, I realized, wait a minute, you are depressed, right? You are more than depressed. You're probably, you know, over anxious, having panic attacks. This is not helpful for anybody, right? Include especially your client. So then that was the point when I realized, you know, if you can't win, don't try. Let somebody else who is, you know, better mentally prepared to help your client win. So I told my boss, my coworkers, look, you guys need to take these cases and prep them all the way through because I don't think I can, you know, be ready for it.
Yeah.
So I quit before my client got hurt, basically, right? Because I knew if I stuck around and half, you know, half-assed the, you know, the job that possibly they could lose at the hearing, right? So I was thinking about my ethics class. I was thinking about my clients and what they had to go through. And I made, you know, it was a very sort of like light bulb moment when I said, okay, no more. You're not helping anyone. What is this for, a paycheck? Nobody cares about a paycheck. You can always make money later, right? But this person has one chance to get their case right. Sure, you can appeal. But again, why would you cost the client more money, right? Just do it right the first time. Win the first time. So because I couldn't do that, I said, look, quit.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So after you quit, how did you navigate that? And like, what were your next steps at that point for you?
So at that point, I, you know, sort of like went into a really dark place. I was, you know, so upset with my husband and, you know, and the affair that I removed myself, right, from my marital residence, right? And I moved back into my childhood bedroom, a little twin size bed, you know, to go from owning your own apartment, you know, with your husband and thinking that you, you know, oh, I'm on my way, I'm a successful lawyer, all these things, to going back to your, you know, your original starting point, which is your parents' house, right? I took, I think, like 10 months of doing nothing, watching the TV show Lost on repeat, right? Me being super late, it was a very depressing period. But, you know, now that I look back on it, I was kind of lucky, right? Because most people don't have their parents to go back to, you know, no pay rent, right? I had to put a deferment on my student loans. It was like a very strange time, right? It was a strange time in my life. And again, just really 10 months of severe depression. So, but then one day, you know, again, I think everyone's body, you know, after going through things like that, with like not eating, not sleeping, not doing normal things, not using your brain, right? I was Redditing all day long. I'm a Redditor. So I don't know if anybody knows that website, but there's
no,
it's like endless.
Love Reddit.
Yeah, Reddit is amazing. It's endless information. So I'm on the divorce section, the divorce Reddit, right? And seeing what everybody's going through because, you know, I'm, you know, at the time I was like 29, 30, didn't know, even as a lawyer, didn't know what divorce really entails. And I can say most lawyers who are not divorce lawyers have no clue what's coming to you in a divorce, right? You know, you guys are in your, you know, your big law firms or whatever else you're doing. And then you get shocked when you hear, when I tell you what divorce law is.
I just want to say, I just remember taking the bar exam, you know, and one of the sessions is like community property or something. I could never understand it. It was like these rules are all made up. So I can only imagine like that divorce law is also probably equally complex, if not more. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely a specialty in New York. You can't try to do divorce and other things. There are so many, you know, there's hundreds of years of case law and how you can find something fair and equitable. New York is not a 50-50 state, you know. It's not like, oh, we buy a house. It's now 50% mine. It's not like that. It's not California, thank God, right? It's a very equitable state, you know. So because it was such a new, brand new field, I knew that I couldn't just, you know, jump from criminal law into divorce. So I, you know, when the light bulb went off, I said, I have to find a divorce lawyer. You know, I have to find a job where they teach you, you know, right from the, you know, as a brand new lawyer, basically, right? Entry level, because really it's a different beast than any of the other fields of law, I think.
Yeah. So how did you go about finding that opportunity. I'm also thinking, you know, for myself, and I think a lot of other attorneys, like, we've switched different career paths just like you, and yep. finding that first step on your, you know, change in industry or change in area can be pretty difficult, especially if you're coming to that second field with not a lot of prior experience. You know, once you get that opportunity, I think that's obviously wonderful, but sometimes it's hard to just find that first thing. So for you, how was that journey and process?
You know, I say a lot of times it's a little bit of luck, right? It's a little bit of the perfect timing of the universe as well. So in my last year of law school, we had to do like senior papers or like, you know, like research papers. And I had happened to do a research paper on engagement rings because I was newly engaged, right, at the, in law school. So I did a research on, oh, who gets to keep the engagement ring, right? Because that's always a fight, you know, that people always wonder about. So I went back and I did the research of like, you know, of who, you know, where did this idea of an engagement ring come from, number one, and what are the legal ramifications if you get a divorce, you know, because an engagement ring could be very expensive, right? It could be, you know, a diamond could be like $50,000, right? So it's not like, you know, for some people, it's not like just a little thing. It's a valuable asset. So I happened to have a research paper on that. So I had a writing sample. Okay. Then the next step was just to go into Indeed and all of the traditional, you know, job search sites. My first set of bosses, you know, Mark Plain and Josh Katz, really are my mentors to this day. They were a newly formed firm. Most divorce firms have, you know, 15 or less lawyers, 10 lawyers or less, because in New York City, we're so huge that you can't have a big law firm. Otherwise, the conflict of interest would be insane, right? Because if you have a bunch of good lawyers together, the husband and wife will both want to hire you. So you can't do that. So you got to kind of chop yourselves up into little firms, right? So my bosses, Mark and Josh, were just, you know, newly formed as a partnership, and they were not ready to hire an associate yet, right? So for a few months, they sat on it. And I was not ready to go back to work. You know, I was still in my mom's house looking at Reddit all day, depressed, right? But the day that I was ready happened to be the day that they were like posting on monster.com, right? So, you know, I found all this out afterwards, after I got hired, obviously, because they told me about the process of, you know, when they started looking for associates. So it just so happened, again, with luck, that they were ready to hire and I was ready to work, right? So then I submit my resume, my writing sample, a cover letter, explaining why I want to do a matrimonial law. And I convinced them that even though I have no experience, you know, it is better that way because I'm a clean slate. You know, I don't have any experience in the field. I only know New York criminal law, right? You know, but I don't have any bad habits either. If you hire an associate with experience, they may have habits from other firms that, you know, are ingrained in them and you may not be able to change, but I'm a clean slate. Teach me fresh what the proper way to do a divorce is. And I think that convinced them. Because they told me I was, you know, they had 1,000 resumes sent or whatever. They received 1,000 applicants and they cut it down to 10 people. And I, for some reason, I found that pile of resumes, the 10 resumes, after I became an associate when I was like looking for papers and I happened to peek through. I'm like, oh my God, these are really impressive people. You know, some of them clerk for divorce judges, you know, all of them were like magna cum laude at other places. I'm like, wow, but I think they picked me because not only did I have a personal, I think, reason, right, for wanting to switch, but I convinced them as a new lawyer, right? This is what I think all of you guys should, you know, say if they ask you, but you don't have any experience in this particular area. You can say, look, but that's perfect, right? Because if you can teach me, you know, from scratch, then I'll do it exactly the way you want to do it, right? You don't have to correct my errors. You don't have to try to say, no, we don't do it that way here, right? So I think, again, it was definitely a bit of luck. Definitely a bit of passion, right? Because I think people are inspired by passion, right? It could be anything. You can have a passion for biking. You can have a passion for painting, whatever it is. When people see that others have passion, they are inspired by it. They're drawn to it, right? Like, I don't care what your passion is, but when I see how much you love it, I admire you, you know? So I think that's part of, you know, why I was able to find and switch the career field.
That's amazing. Yeah, that. So I know now you have your own shop, right? So what was the progression, you know, working for Mark and Josh? Like, it sounds like it was an amazing opportunity for you.
They're the best. Right. I still call them for the tough questions because, you know, they have tons of experience. So,
yeah. So how long did you work for them, Beatrice?
For 4 years. For 4 years, I worked for them. And then, you know, obviously, you know, not everything can last forever. They actually broke up their firms and went their own separate way. So that's where Albany comes in, right? Albany is a great way to network. Albany is a great way to get hired and get a job. So I was at an Albany event saying, oh, you know, my bosses are breaking up. They're like asking me to, both of them are asking me, do you want to come with me? Just like, you know, in the world, who do you want to live with, mom or dad? It felt exactly like my clients. I'm like, oh my God, what a tough decision. I love them both. Both of them are excellent lawyers. Who do you choose to go with? Because if you go with one, you're still going to see the other, right? Because, you know, New York City is a very small town. I have the cases with the same lawyers all the time. So, you know, I thought it would be best and most tactful to not choose anybody, right? Say, I love you both, so I'm leaving you both and look for another opportunity. So at an Albany event, I met Pauline Younghaw. And I told her, Pauline, look, my boss is about to break up and I don't want to choose one of them. I just want to like start fresh so that there's no ill will, right? She goes, oh, don't worry. We're going to ask around. And within a week, Pauline found, you know, Pauline is a great networker. She had somebody said, look, they're looking for an associate in Manhattan. So within a week, I had a job. No, you know, awkward cover letters. I'm Beatrice and I'm, you know, so-and-so. None of that. Within a week, I got a job, you know, in Manhattan. So the progression from going from a firm, working for somebody, to going to my own firm was also, again, a lot of it is luck. Maybe it's just me. I'm a lucky person. I attract luck. I don't know what it is, but everyone can attract luck, by the way, right? Just think positively and think about what you want in life, and it will come to you. During the pandemic, the divorce rate went through the roof, as you guys can imagine, right? Everyone's trapped in a studio in New York. Everyone's trapped in a one-bedroom, work from home. You got to see, you know, you got to see your spouse 24/7. You got to hear their work conversations, you know? Even myself, I always joke that, you know, my husband and I were in a one-bedroom and he would walk around like shirtless. And then when I'm having my Albany Zoom meetings, or my Zoom meetings, everyone's like, is that your husband? Shirtless? I'm like, oh. So, right, the, you know, marital strife was through the roof during pandemic. And then, you know, a year after pandemic, I started getting nonstop cases, right? So much so that I thought, wait a minute, I don't have to share, you know, my cases with the firm anymore. I have enough cases to make my own money and keep 100%, you know, of, you know, what I was earning. Because as an associate, you work for a firm, you get a salary, right? But whether you work 20 hours or 80 hours, your salary is pretty much, you know, the same. You know, even if you bring in your own clients, every firm has a different structure of commission, right? But if you have your own firm, you keep 100% of that. If you work 80 hours, 80 hours of that, you know, is yours. So for me, it was a financial decision, right, to open my own firm, and a very lucrative decision, right? So instead of giving 75% of my earnings to my former boss, right, I would get to keep, you know, whatever, my full billable rate. And in New York City, divorce attorneys, you know, we command anywhere between, you know, $500 to $1,000 an hour. So imagine not having to share 75% of that, right? So just keeping it for yourself.
I love that you mentioned, you know, like there are different ways of getting a job. Like it was, one was through like Monster and Indeed, the second time was through Albany. And you mentioned a lot of it is through luck. And I maybe like you don't have like the typical career path, you know, like in people's minds when they think like, oh, I'm going to be a lawyer. Like I think the ideal path is like, oh, to go to a big firm or like to clerk for some judge and then go with a big firm or whatever and then do that for a little bit and then finally pivot. And I love hearing, you know, how like your path may be like just a little bit unconventional. You started out as a prosecutor, but then you were able to pivot into divorce attorney, divorce law. And you found ways to do that. And I think it kind of reminds me of my own experience too, of pivoting. And
I think being able to hear more stories about that can give a lot of other attorneys like hope that they're not just like trapped or they have to do one specific path. And just in life in general, right? Like, you don't have to stick to one specific role or occupation or career or like path that you think that you have to do. Like, you can always feel free to pivot,
yeah,
if your circumstances changes, and it'll always be okay.
I agree.
100%, especially as lawyers, right?
Yeah, definitely. I really liked hearing that as well, Beatrice. Like, it resonates a lot with me. I also made a few pivots and changed to industries that, you know, similar to you, like, I didn't have experience in, and you know, made the case for why I think I would be a good fit. So, like, to Ona's point, just hearing more of these stories, I think, is really helpful to share with others so that they know there are different options and different paths. So, Beatrice, I wanted to ask too, like, during this whole time hearing about your career progression, and, you know, you had shared the 10 months or so that you were going through severe depression, living at your parents' house. And when you went to work for Mark and Josh, like, you felt like you were ready to make a change, to start working. But I'm assuming there were still, you know, lingering effects of emotion and perhaps depression. So in thinking through that journey, was it, you know, just powering through, and then, like, did work sort of help you continue, like, to move on and take the next step in your life personally and emotionally? Like, how did that sort of, that interplay work for you?
You know, it's actually the work that helped me get out of the depression, right? Because I saw how everybody else's divorce was way worse than mine. Was like, I was, you know, I didn't have children. We had a very limited, you know, we only had an apartment, retirement, some savings. Other people had, oh my God, massive businesses and three kids and dogs and cats and all sorts of issues. And it was helping my clients that really mentally helped me. Because I feel like once you help others, right, when you go ahead and help others, your mindset changes about yourself. Because then you realize, oh, I should be grateful that, mm-hmm, you know, I'm not, you know, doing a 5-year custody battle, right? I should be grateful that, you know, I don't really have anything tying myself to my ex-husband, right? So helping my clients go through their problems. And, you know, again, you're right, I was still depressed. But when you come and become a lawyer, a lot of it is like show business, right? The show must go on. The court does not care if you're depressed or you have a breakup, right? The court will sympathize, of course, but you're there to do a job. You're there to put on a show, right? Especially as a litigator, you got to perform. So right away, because I finally saw that, oh God, this client is depending on me. My client is depending on me and my bosses to help him out of this way horrible situation, right? Of, you know, am I going to lose my kid? I've been accused of abuse. You know, I didn't abuse them. I've been accused of it, though. You have to help me because I want to see my daughter. I love her, right? So I think my clients helped me with the depression a lot because I saw them that they were so grateful for me to fight hard. And then anytime you win, you get addicted to winning. You know, it's sort of, I don't know if other lawyers would have to like write motions or try cases, but the win is like one of the most addicting things ever, right? When you see a decision that the judge wrote agreeing with you, quoting your cases, it's like, you know, when the Knicks win a championship, it's like a proof of a trophy, right? Because you can try and say, look, see, I was right. Everything I told you, 100% right. The judge agreed with me, said they were wrong. And it's also another way to kind of rub it into your opposing counsel. As I stated to you prior, right? The judge would have done this, and look, the judge did it, right? So after that started happening, my confidence grew and my desire to help other people grew, right? So then it definitely got me out of the mindset that, oh, Beatrice, you know, you're in debt from law school, you're depressed, your husband left you, you're getting divorced, you know, he was cheating on you. Like, all of that was, of course, always in the back of my mind, you know, self-doubt. Oh, you failed the bar. All of these things always, you know, like, obviously, as a human being, that, you know, your, you know, struggles always kind of like shape who you are. But after I became, you know, a new divorce lawyer, I think my mental health flipped in a way, because when I saw that, I tried hard. All those hours on Westlaw, whatever it is, right? All of it is worth it, because that winning decision is like, you know, it's you know, not a better feeling than that, right? So after, I would say, about 2 years, right, of, you know, being a young lawyer and still, you know, obviously, whenever somebody came in with a cheating case, I could feel myself like, oh my God, don't cry in front of the client, you know? But after a while, you know, I think helping others, no matter what it is, volunteering at a soup kitchen, volunteering at pro bono clinic, when you help others, it helps yourself.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, it's really inspiring. And it's very clear, like, your passion and you being such a fierce advocate for your clients really just shines through. Like, I like, you know, we're virtual right now, but I really just feel like it radiates.
Yeah, like, I can see your determination and, like, your hard work and your duty and, like, loyalty to, like, serving the community, which is really great. I did have a question, though, and because you mentioned, you know, like, all those long hours, working really hard, and even before, like, growing up, right, like, you were, like, the ideal Asian kid, you know, succeeding in everything that you do. How do you deal with, and do you ever experience burnout? And if you do, like, how do you deal with that, you know, like, constantly trying to be, like, the best that you can, doing all this, putting in all the work?
Yeah.
Because I personally struggle with it a lot. So I would just love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I definitely, actually, in the month of March of this year was the most probably stressful month in terms of my career. So, you know, divorce lawyers, we go to court a lot, we litigate a lot, but very few cases are brought to trial, because if you have two reasonable people, it'll settle before trial, right? But for some reason, I had taken over cases from other attorneys that were on the trial track. And guess what? You know, they didn't settle. And it was sort of like 4 trials in the month of March alone. So every single week, it was just me prepping another client for a trial and nonstop 9 to 5 in the courtroom. And then, you know, 7 a.m. wake up to prep and then go to sleep at like 2 a.m. to prepare for the next day. And I definitely felt like I was going to mentally break. But what helped me was my friends and my community. I really think, again, I don't know if it's luck, but I have like angels on earth as my friends, right? Really, the people who I have chosen to be part of my life or want to be part of my life have helped me in so many ways. Without my friends and the community, and even, you know, Albany, you know, without them, I feel like I definitely would have broken down. I think, like, for example, when I needed coverage, right? Because I'm like, oh my God, all these trials are going on. My other cases that are on for status conferences, on for, you know, regular court appearances, I don't ever want to cancel a court date, because then, you know, divorce, you know, there's too many divorces going on. You can't get a court date for more than 3 or 4 months. So all my friends stepped up and said, Beatrice, if you need coverage, we will go and fill in for you. Just tell us what's going on and we'll update the judge. People stepped in. I was, you know, on my outside planning of, I was planning a 40th birthday trip, right? And, you know, it took a lot of logistics because I'm doing like a group trip. And my friend Mei Wong, who is one of the chairs of professional development here in Albany, she stepped up unbelievably. She took charge and said, I will email all your friends and family and I'll gather all the information I need. Without that, without the help of my friends and family, I think I definitely could see myself completely burnt out. And again, going back in a deep, dark space. But with the help of my friends, I think that's what you have to do. You find a community, you find your friends. Your friends will always be there for you. The ones who are good to you will always be loyal to you. Obviously, there's always people that you meet and you think that they're loyal to you. You think that they'll help you. But at the end of the day, they're just there to sort of use you or do whatever. But the true friends, you know, will stick with you and help you. And I always call them angels on earth, right? Because it's like when in your toughest times, you know, somebody's going to step up. Somebody you may not expect to step up, right? Will step up and help you through. And people, what I find are people are always willing to help, right? When people email me, oh, can you help me with this? If I have the time, definitely. I'm going to take whatever I can to help that person. And I feel that most people are like that, right? Most people are, if you ask them for help, they will help you. Very few people will say, nah, I don't feel like it, right? Especially the ones who are your friends. So I think in terms of your mental health burnout, if you're feeling yourself burn out, ask your friends for something simple. Hey, can you let me know what you know, I have staff to help me do all my work, but for other things, like personal things, like, hey, can you help me do this trip thing, or can you help me do something else? Your friends will definitely help you, you know?
Yeah, I think that's like such good advice, and I think it's like so simple but yet commonly overlooked,
to ask for help.
To ask for help, because I think a lot of people think to themselves, like, I have to do everything. I get super overwhelmed, right? Like, I have to do this, I have to do that. I can't ask other people, I can't overburden them. But you mentioned, like, that people are always happy to help, especially if they're your friends who care about you. And I think that's great. And you mentioned that you were planning your 40th birthday. We were going to say this at the end of the podcast, but we want to wish you a happy birthday, because we know it's your birthday month.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes.
What are your plans for your 40th birthday?
The trip. Trip.
Yeah. So I saw somebody else do this idea, and I thought I loved it. They invited basically all their friends and family just to go to like an all-inclusive place. So I'm going to an all-inclusive in Cancun, Mexico. So I have about 20 people coming with me, and we're all going to meet up for Memorial Day weekend and have a great time, right? Food, drinks, everything included. Sun, you know, New York City's been really cloudy and dreary this year. So I thought, let's go to Cancun and do something, you know, very fun and exciting. So I'm looking forward to it.
That's amazing. We're really excited for you. We will want to hear about the trip after.
Yeah.
We will live vicariously through you. I think the biggest fee too is actually planning and executing, having 20 people go. And I think to your point, like, that's where your friends came in to help you. Ona and I are in the same group of friends, and I feel like it's very hard.
We see each other like maybe twice a year, because
and that's just like two people, right? So I think just pulling off a trip for 20 people is an amazing feat. So I'm very, very excited for you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it's as adults, you know, all of us have separate schedules, separate responsibilities. A lot of people have children responsibilities, right? Work responsibilities. So it is hard, and that's why I'm always grateful to see my friends, right? Because I know sometimes I won't be able to see you for years because of whatever situation. But yes, thanks to my friend May, she was able to. If anyone knows May, right, they know that she's the best organizer. She will get everything together. She had charts, PowerPoints, all sorts of things going on. So I was focused on my clients, so I couldn't pay attention. But my travel agent was like, "You got to get me info. We need, like, payments. We need deposits. We need flights." And I was like, oh, I can't possibly reach out to 20 people and get all of that stuff when I have 4 trials going on. So she really stepped up. Yeah, and I think, you know, for adult friendships are very underrated, right? Everyone's always talking about romantic relationships. Romantic relationships, great. If you have one, great. But I feel like your overall, you know, community, right? Your overall friends, even if you have one good friend, that they really will help you save your life, you know? Even when I was going through my divorce, my friends, I feel like, saved my life, right? Because I was so depressed. I wanted to give up. Everything was so horrible. And, you know, my parents were there for me, of course, right? But I think it was my friends who kept calling and checking in with me, because they knew what was happening. I even had one friend, Leslie Chang in Boston, who was my law school friend. She called my husband at work. She pretended that she was one of his clients and dialed in and said, "Hey, you better check on Beatrice. She's doing very, very poorly," you know. And even my ex was like, "Oh, okay, all right, you know, but I'll make sure, like, I'll talk to her or something." Because honestly, your friends are angels on earth. Like, through my divorce, through every bad time in life, through my bar failure, right? Again, as a successful, ideal Asian, you know, student, failing the bar was like ground shaking, literally the first failure of my life, you know, literally the first one. I always had like A's, 100s, always, right? So to fail the bar by 3 points, by the way, guys, was just very unlucky. Don't change your multiple choice answer, student. When you're taking the bar and you're done early, don't go back and change your answers, because your first answer is correct. So, yeah, I had 10 minutes left. I changed all my answers. So, yeah. So 3 points I failed by, and I was so the press that my friends are like, don't worry, you know, Michelle Obama failed and Kamala Harris failed and JFK failed and Hillary Clinton failed. Look at them. And I'm like, you're right. I can be like Hillary Clinton. I have great pantsuits, right? So it really got me through like all her depressions, you know, all, you know, honestly, really, to my friends, you know, all my friends through the years in Albany and everything, you know, Young Chen, Christopher Bate, everyone has helped me in my mental health. When you say, how can you save yourself from burnout? Really, I think my answer is friends, right? My answer is, and even if you're antisocial, you can meet friends online, right? Because I feel like a lot of the online forums, right? As long as you have connection with somebody, right? It doesn't have to be in person. You can, I talk to my friends on WhatsApp all day long, right? So I read recently, there's like a loneliness pandemic going on across America where people feel disconnected, lonely, especially after the COVID, you know, it's COVID lockdowns. A lot of people lost contact, right? There is a loneliness, you know, epidemic, right? But, you know, one easy way to get out of it is, I think, is just to put yourself out there. Obviously, extroverts easier, introverts, you know, I really admire the introverts for trying to get out there and, you know, make friends and meet a community, right? Because that's like, I feel like understanding an introvert, I have a lot of friends who are introvert. It takes a lot of energy, right? But to defeat loneliness, to defeat depression, I think even if you don't go outside, just try to find a community of people that are like you. If you love Game of Thrones, go to the Game of Thrones community, right? If you love bowling, try to go to a bowling league. Just do what you love to do and try to meet people who are like you. And I think, again, at the end of the day, all people want to do is help you. So without my friend, if I didn't have friends, I definitely don't think I would have been as happy or got myself out of a dark hole. I think it was due to the pushing of my friends and their assistance of me that helps me through every single dark time. I don't think I can think of a time of life where I was stressed or sad or anything like that, that it was another person that really gave me the you know, like you said, the beacon of light, right? To tell me that it's not always going to be this bad. Get out of it. You know, we can help you.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. And I love how much gratitude you have. I was watching some motivational speech from some like Olympian. And one of the things that he mentioned, right, as like Olympian mindset is like expressing gratitude, showing gratitude. And that sort of helps you, especially in like your downtimes. Like I think he mentioned like 4 months before his first Olympic games, he like shattered his wrist and was in a really serious injury, but he was so grateful that he was alive. And, you know, like you don't have to, and I think your stories explain, like show that you don't have to just be grateful for like these big things. Like you can be grateful for these small things that enrich your life. And I guess, and I think from your perspective, it's your friends, you know, your sense of your community and your sense of purpose to helping your clients get out of divorces. So yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that with us.
Thank you so much for sharing your story, Beatrice. Thanks so much for being open and vulnerable. We really appreciate that. It's such a important part of your life. You know, like that vulnerability, I think, has really been the thread that kind of goes through all these different times in your life, professionally, personally. Thinking back on our conversation, I'm going to continue to remember the words like passion and beacon of hope and light and help and friends and gratitude. And I think that positivity really shines through.
Yeah.
And I think just you and sharing your story, and to those who will listen through this podcast, I think they will find it very inspiring.
Yeah.
Your journey from, you know, where you started to where you are now, like it certainly inspired me.
Yeah, for sure.
And we're really grateful for you to take this time to be so open and just talk about your life so far.
Yeah, it was such a pleasure talking to you. And I feel so lucky to know you.
I know. I do too.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you, Maggie. Yeah, just some closing thoughts. I think in terms of pivoting in your life, the beauty about having a JD, right? Or the beauty of anybody, doesn't, you can be in any career. this is America, the land of, you know, opportunity. Basically, anyone can pivot from anything. You don't have to be a lawyer, right? I have friends who went from lawyers to do very different fields. I think Eddie Huang, who's, you know, a big chef now, was a lawyer at one point, right? Andrew Yang was a lawyer at one point. So I think people shouldn't be afraid to pivot. People shouldn't be afraid to change. Yes, absolutely. We are taught from law school, from our whatever, you got to stay on the path, get on law review, get on big law, and then become a partner, then become an equity partner, right? Like, yeah, that's not for everyone, right? So you don't have to do it that way, right? There's money to be made everywhere. This is New York City, right? With lots of, you know, if money is what you want, then, you know, you can find it and pivot and change your career. If it's other things that you want, passion, other, you know, people you want to help. I had a 72-year-old classmate in law school, and his dream was to help other elderly people with, you know, trust and estates and their, you know, their struggles. So anybody at any age can pivot, right? So that's the thing. As long as you have the tenacity for it, right? So I think what people who in Albany who know me know that I'm very tenacious and I'm not going to stop. I'm going to, if I want something, it's going to be mine, right? But if you just kind of treat yourself that way, say, look, I want to be, you know, happy. I want to do what I want to do. Then you can, as long as you put your best efforts into it, you can always pivot. You're not stuck forever. Some people feel like, oh, I'm stuck in this dead end job, but I have to feed my kids and pay tuition. You don't, you know, it's not always like that. You take the risk, you take the chance, and you can definitely change, you know, what you are doing every single day. And then in terms of gratitude, not everyone can be, you know, not everyone can think positive all the time, right? Even me, I find myself complaining and crying to my friends, you know, but then at the end of the day, you know, we are lawyers, right? We are privileged. We are, you know, I volunteer in the pro bono clinic and people come in who make, you know, in a month what I make in a day, right? So that then you realize you're privileged no matter what type of lawyer you are, right? You're educated. You're in that top 2% of the country that has a higher education. So you have to think of it that way, right? If you're a lawyer, you are privileged right away, right? So that there are others in a way worse situations than you. So if you have the ability to help, if you have the ability to think about it that way, like, oh man, I may be in a tough spot, but there are also others suffering way more, right, than me. There's wars going on in the world. So if you think of it that way, then you're like, oh shoot, I should probably be grateful and not be this ungrateful person complaining about, oh, you know, I didn't get the dress I didn't want sold out, you know. Yeah. Those are, you know, the little things. Oh, my boss is, like, giving me, you know, dirty looks. He's kind of ghosting me. This guy on Tinder is ghosting me and not returning my, you know, all these things, right? If you look in the big picture, of course, you're going to be ungrateful, right? Oh, you know, no one's asking me out. Okay, but guess what? You know, look at all the other things that you have, right? And just think of it that way.
Yeah, I agree. Beautiful. What a beautiful closing remark.
Agreed. I'm not going to say anything else.
Yeah, I don't ruin it.
That was lovely.
Perfect way to end.
Yes. So thank you again, Beatrice. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us for Hello, It's Me. This podcast is brought to you by the Asian American Bar Association of New York, a not-for-profit membership organization that advocates for New York's Asian Pacific American attorneys. Support our pro bono work for our community and fight against anti-Asian hate at aabany.org or on social media at aabany. The Professional Development Committee is led by Nanda Wing Kerr and Mei Wong, produced by Francis Chen, hosted by Ona Liu and Maggie Huang. Music is Easy Lemon by Kevin McLeod of IncompiTech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 4.0 License. This podcast is copyright 2024 by Asian American Bar Association of New York.